Our next speaker is Mike Alowitz. You want to just put up that leading slide there?
And let's put the mirror thing back on.
I have no clue about that. Mike Alowitz is a leading socialist activist and agitprop muralist. He has painted in South Central LA, Baghdad, Chernobyl, Nicaragua, Belfast, the occupied territories, and numerous other locations. His murals have frequently been destroyed. He is the most censored artist in the U.S. Alowitz is currently the associate professor of art. That's a big statement. Bravo.
I have not been able to find anyone else. It comes close.
Associate professor of art at Central Connecticut State University, where he teaches street art and mural painting. He is the organizer of the New Britain International Mural Slam, a member of the United Scenic Artists and the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Moving Picture Technicians, Artists, and Allied Crafts of the U.S. and its territories in Canada, Local 829, and the Connecticut State University chapter of AAUP, which appears to be an activist group. The title of his paper is Marks on the Wall, Agitprop Murals and Class Struggles.
Okay, well, due to technical can I put this in here? Due to technical difficulties, I don't have my notes, so since it's not, they have it on mirror image, so I'll do the best I can here. Red Lightning, 1919. I want to go back for a moment to agitprop art that came out of the early years of the Russian Revolution, because it was like a lightning bolt that hit working people and artists all over the world. What's going on here? Artists in the new Soviet Union organized hundreds, if not thousands, of festivals, street demonstrations, decorated squares, took their art onto the street and made it one of the great rewards of the revolution. Workers, too, became involved in this. Workers in factories made art. They formed artist clubs. There were army units of theater and music. All those kind of things went on. There was a great cauldron of creative activity that existed. It was a very short period of time from the revolution up until Stalin came to power, but it was a very important time for the development of agitprop art. These are Rosta Windows. This is the that's the acronym for the Telegraph and Railroad Workers Union, which artists worked with very closely to make giant, colorful posters that would be sent out on agitprop trains and to communicate with the new Soviet Union. You already showed some of these, but that's an agit ship. This is an agit bus. These are artists painting agit trains and then loading them with revolutionary literature. Spray painting and painting trains did not begin in New York City, as we may think. Agitprop trains went across this vast landscape. If you ever saw the movie Reds, there's a scene where you see the agitprop train shooting out there. They were brightly colored. Some of them worked like flip books. You could stand by the side of the tracks and watch a story as they went by. In the agitprop train were cinema cars where you could see some of the greatest experimental films that have ever been made by people like Zsigmond Vertov and Eisenstein. There were galleries to go in. People who had been deprived of culture their whole lives could go in and look at art for the first time. Vladimir Kotlin's monument to the Third Communist International. The founding of the Communist International was a tremendous inspiration to working people all over the world. This is before Stalinism. And the idea of socialism and workers running a country was a very, very popular and very wonderful idea that inspired people. The way you feel a little bit watching Egypt today is how people felt about the revolution that was going on in Russia. Designed to be as tall as a 130-story building and span a river, it had buildings that rotated at different speeds that were all made of glass so that you would always be able to see what your leaders were doing. It was a great visionary time of art. Of course, it couldn't be made because it was a dirt-poor place, but workers made models of it and carried it on demonstrations, because the swirling forms of Tatlin's monument symbolize the dialectic of the revolution to working people. This is a drawing for a performance on the anniversary of the founding of the Communist International that, unfortunately, since I don't have my notes, you will have to imagine. Thousands of soldiers participated in this. There was a curtain of smoke that was drawn between the closed city of capitalism and the open city of socialism on the right, and flamethrowers were used to cut through the circle of smoke, saying what workers produce should go to the workers. There was a mass dance led by gymnasts and discus throwers that was planned. Thousands of people were to participate in this. This particular piece was not done. This piece was. This is the Symphony of Sirens that was performed twice, once in Baku and once in Moscow. Back then, of course, every workplace had a whistle. People didn't necessarily have watches, so you had hundreds and thousands of whistles and ways to call people to work. And using the Navy flotilla and the horns on the Navy boats, they used cannons and machine guns as percussion. There was a great symphony that was played on all of the workplace whistles in the city of Baku and Moscow. And the way that the music was coordinated, the conductor, again, I don't have the name in front of me, Avramov or something, conducted with flaming torches. And there were semaphore flags from assistant conductors to spread the word, so that the signals would go out all across the city and people would pull the whistles at the right time. Now, I wanted to show these things because to understand the Russian Revolution and the impact of revolutionary struggle, you have to understand that this is the kind of thing that people were participating in. It wasn't just reading a newspaper, a political program, or having a better working condition. It was their actual entry into art making and into a creative cultural process. All of that vast human energy and struggle and suffering and joy created that amazing art that came out of the early years of the Russian Revolution. Fast forward to today. This is Shepard Fairey's work. Shepard Fairey is put forward as one of the predominant street artists in the United States by the arts establishment. What Shepard Fairey did is to take these images that were created in this giant human struggle, decontextualize them, make them into little designs to sell junk to make money. It is a perfect marriage for him to make Barack Obama's poster. A mediocre graphic designer stealing the work of millions of people to promote a tool of Wall Street who has done nothing but carry through every single policy of the Bush administration. It is a perfect match. Sometimes you get those where art meets politics. Shepard Fairey meets Obama. Very, very good. Never mind that this poor Latino guy, Manny, didn't get any credit for the photo he took. The real question involved is not understanding this. Now, the real question everyone in this room should be asking, every artist should be asking, is why artists went in lockstep behind Obama. Why we didn't know enough to know what was going to happen. Well, Shepard Fairey, he's a hustler, and selling little hunks of his wall now. We're talking about walls here. Selling a little hunk of his walls now on eBay for $100. Now, Banksy, he does a lot better. He's selling his stuff for over $1 million. Now, and he's a, in my opinion, a talented artist. I think Banksy is a very innovative and talented artist. But he's promoted as a superstar also. And for a different reason, because he is a talented person. But look what happens when you make art. When you make stencils that are designed to be a political comment, and it ends up being worth $250,000 or $300,000. They don't do that just to promote Banksy. They do that to hold out the carrot for everyone. Because today, there are tens of thousands of kids looking at who go out to do street art at night, and they're thinking now, oh, well, maybe this is a good career path that I can have. And Banksy's work is problematical. It's fun, but it's not real dangerous stuff. He went to Palestine and he painted holes in the walls. I'm glad he did that. A couple of years before that, we went to Palestine and we painted holes in the walls. But we did it with Palestinian construction workers. We did it as part of raising the idea of a democratic, secular Palestine and to expose the myth that you could have two states in Palestine, Israel. That's a lie. It will never happen. There has to be a struggle for a democratic, secular Palestine. That is the only way to peace in the Middle East. That's a hard debate to have. Banksy does not get involved in those kinds of discussions. That's a hole we painted at the Rachel Corrie Peace Center. Rachel Corrie was an artist student from Evergreen State College who was killed by the Israeli Defense Forces, and this is part of the struggle against housing demolitions. We organized a labor delegation from the trade union movement that went as part of this thing. It plays a very specific role within the fight against these wars and occupations. It's a sharp weapon. It's not a dull weapon. Well, along with promoting superstars in this war for the walls, we've seen the promotion of a plethora of these mural programs in cities and towns all across the country. Unbelievable numbers of these programs. Now, the granddaddy of them is the Philadelphia Mural Program. This is the board of directors of the Philadelphia Mural Program. Some of them. Citizens Bank, Bank of America, Liberty Private Trust. Who are these people? Well, these are the people who are foreclosing on tens of thousands of people in the Philadelphia area, throwing them out of the house, keeping redlining going, supporting all of the racist policies of the city, gutting union contracts, doing every rotten thing there is to do. We're all familiar with that. Why are these people supporting public art? Why do they want murals on the walls of their city? The person who officially formed the mural program that explicitly started as an anti-graffiti program, anti-graffiti, pro-mural, Ed Rendell, Governor Ed Rendell. Before he was Governor Ed Rendell, he was the district attorney who was responsible for the frame-up and the jailing of Mumia Abu-Jamal. These are the worst of humanity. Why do these people want to support public murals? Well, as Mary Delasour said, they want us to perfume the sewers. They want us to perfume the sewers. They want us to paint pretty pictures next to the barred windows. They want us to paint over the decay. Philadelphia is a decaying city like so many other industrial cities. Which one's that? Okay. So, I'm going to move on really quick. We have a very rich tradition of agitprop art in this country, but it's been lost. A few blocks from here, not far, the Patterson Silk Strike pageant took place at Madison Square Garden, where tens of thousands of workers participated during the Patterson Silk Strike. When you paint walls with working people as part of a struggle to fundamentally change society, you get a very different response than a Shepherd Fairey or a Banksy or a Ballou. This is a mural with striking meatpackers in Austin, Minnesota. This mural was destroyed. You won't find any news about it in the art press. Mural destroyed in Northern Ireland that I painted because it was an internationalist mural, as well as supporting the children who are under attack by the British occupation forces and Protestant mobs. You won't see anything about that. As Che said, this is destroyed in Nicaragua, where all the murals I painted in Nicaragua were destroyed. Che said, you know, as long as you are willing to stay within the invisible cage with your art, all right, they will heap awards on you. As long as you're willing to act like a monkey, as long as you're willing to walk down the red carpet, as long as you're willing to do these things, you will reap the rewards. If not, you will get a very different response. And I want to conclude with something that I just found out about yesterday. At Central Connecticut State University, we teach mural painting and street art. It's the only street art course in the country that I know about, despite the fact that tens of thousands of young people go out every day to make street art. It's an amazing statement about the art world, right? This is a mural on the campus there. We have the mural slam that was mentioned. Yesterday, our mural class met for the first time because of snow, and we have graffiti kids who come and go through the program who reported that the major crime unit of the Hartford Police came to our last mural slam disguised as reporters from the Hartford Advocate. A month after the mural slam, went and rousted about a dozen graffiti artists, local graffiti artists. It took them in for interrogations, had them in the police station. Now, this is a classroom of mine on the college campus. This is a classroom. It's a street art. It's an event of my class. And the major crime unit came into it to go after kids making art. This is the difference between when you make art like this and when you make art that decorates the decay. These are all pieces that were done during the mural slam. You get 4-foot wall by 12-foot wall by 8 hours. Has a very different thrust and a very different aesthetic to it. All of this work is part of an international discussion that's going on about art, about street art, and about politics. It is just as much an expression of the working class as what's happening in Liberation Square in Egypt. It is all part and parcel of the same historic struggle. And all of the fabric of this system is beginning to unravel. And it started with a 27-year-old kid in Tunisia who ended up as a street vendor because he couldn't get the job he wanted and burned himself and sparked a rebellion that is changing the world before our very eyes. And the world is not going to be the same again because the conditions that exist in the Arab world exist in every other part of the world, including in this country. And so what we do now with our art can play a critical role in advancing these struggles. This is a piece that I passed near my home not too long ago. I'm going to end on it because I don't think you can say it much better than this. Fuck the cops, I volunteer to lead the revolution.